At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
This is Melissa Mingle, friend of the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. you start messing it up when you try to do too much.
I know.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. Jason, I bet with two words, I can take you back to 1994. You ready?
Yes.
So I open the door.
I'm a loser, baby.
Yeah, I don't know if that's on your list. Maybe it's on my list. Maybe it's not. You guys will have to wait and find out. But we are here with the top five songs from 1994. Now, there are some caveats to this list. We have just finished with an epic run of incredible albums from 1994, asterisk 1995, Collective Soul. And we are not choosing any of the songs from any of those albums. Those are off the table. And we also have covered at least one big album from that year previously, Get a Grip by Aerosmith, which has a lot of great songs on it.
That was a big album for me in 94.
Yeah, the elimination of that album probably cut your music catalog in half from what you were listening to that year.
Yeah, I told you that I wasn't really in the mainstream flow at this time. So I caught stuff, you know, my college roommates would play stuff, but I mean, when you knock off Green Day, you knock off Collective Soul, you knock off Aerosmith, you knock off Live, I'm suddenly reeling for good songs, so.
Yeah, but as I've mentioned in our previous episodes, there were a lot of really big albums that came out that year. Albums from Soundgarden, from The Cranberries, from Oasis, and some that I'm sure that we're going to get into today if I didn't hit it already on your list. And that's the other thing. I don't know what Jason has on his top five list. He doesn't know what I have on my top five list. And the way that we do these fun little games, if you haven't been here before, ladies and gentlemen, is we tease the song and have the other guy try to guess it. So we will do that with you as well. I will start describing a song. Jason's going to try to figure out which song it is that I'm talking about, and you can play along as you listen. Jason, what do you think? 1994, we're almost done with the year. What are your thoughts?
1994 is the 1984 of the 90s. It's the convergence of a lot of good movies, a lot of great music, a lot of great pop culture moments. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things happening in 94. And it was one of the very, very last times, I think, where the internet was not having a major impact in people's lives. And so you got your news from the TV or when you went and saw a movie or, you know, news stations and that type of thing. So,
yeah, I mean, we just covered Collective Soul. Just the last week we had that episode come out.
Right.
And I listened to Ed Roland talking to, he was talking about how he talked to a record executive after they had been going for a couple of years and they weren't getting any support from the record label. And Napster was starting to be a thing.
Yeah.
And he said to the guy, he's like, what are you guys doing about this? You know, what precautions are you taking? And the record executive said, it's a fad. It'll be gone by next year.
Oh my gosh.
And Ed Roland said he knew at that point he needed to pull from the record label and make his own independent label. And that's exactly what he did. And it probably saved him. But yes, obviously everybody knew what was happening except the people in the record industry. And I told you, looking at the chart topping songs from 1994, I can tell that this is the beginning of the end as far as I am concerned for music, because you have got a slew of modern R&B, rap, very like teenage pop songs that were not my cup of tea at all. I still don't really enjoy them, but they became the mainstay of music and have been the mainstay of music, popular music, for the last 25 years. But enough blathering.
Yes, let's get into it.
Who's going to go first? Am I going to go first? You going first?
Why don't you go first?
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay.
Five.
All right, my first song. I'm going to totally blow your mind here, but I'm not even going to start by talking about a Seattle band.
All right.
I'm going to talk about a band that you and I have covered before on this podcast. They are a California band, played on the Sunset Strip. The bass player wrote most of their songs, heavily involved with heroin.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Big album.
I had this album, Keep Going. Okay. I think I sold it back to the used CD store.
Okay. All right. So, clue number one, the song was composed by the bass player.
Yes.
Who wrote most of their songs. Clue number three, I've already said, covered this band before. Clue number four, this was originally a bossa nova sounding song.
Okay.
Okay. Clue number five, they composed it in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. The lyrics were about lying to his fiance about his drug use, specifically deceit and broken promises is what this is about. Okay.
Okay.
His fiance.
You're misleading me here.
I led you down the primrose path on purpose.
Yes, you did.
Who did you think it was?
Well, you were setting me up for Motley Crue right there.
You bet your booty
had,
I was.
Had a big album in 94.
Yeah.
Where they had dumped Vince Neil and brought on John Corabi. Yes. And so I'm like, okay, is this Hooligan's Holiday?
I start writing all these things down. I'm like, holy cow, this sounds exactly like Nikki Sixx, but it's not Nikki Sixx.
All right, D. I know what this song is.
Okay.
Stop right there because it's my number four.
Okay. Right? All right. I will pivot. Everybody hold on to those little nuggets. If you think you have an idea, all you have to do is wait for two more songs and then we'll be back to this song that's my number five.
We'll start over. It's fine. Start over is fine.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do my number five.
Your number five.
All right. I'm actually dying to talk to you about this.
Okay.
I love this song, but I have seen it ranked as this band's worst song. I've seen fans hate on this song. I might get ridiculed for this pick, but I love this song. Okay?
Okay.
So again, this is a Sunset Strip band.
Okay.
This is a band we've talked about. This song was released at the very end of 1994.
Okay.
And it's attached to a pretty prominent movie in 94. I actually called the radio station when they played it.
Uh-huh.
Because I was like, holy cow, that's a song from a band that we have not heard from in a long time.
Uh-huh.
Are we getting an album from these guys? Like, what is the deal? I remember having a conversation with the DJ who was like, man, I hope so, but I don't think so. This is just a single that they just released, and it's going for a movie, but that's it.
Okay, so we've got a band that's got a history.
Yeah.
We've covered before.
Yep.
They have this, like, single that comes out in 94.
Yes.
Just a single.
Just a single.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, all right. It reached number 10 on the mainstream rock charts, so it's a hit on the rock charts.
Yeah.
A prominent member of this band left this band because of this song. So it's like the song that you could never talk about. Like, they could never play this in concert because it caused people to lose their jobs in the band.
Okay.
A different member of the band was working on a solo project at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was away, but still an active member of the band.
Yeah.
When he heard this song on the radio, he's like, I didn't work on that song. I guess I might be fired. And turns out he was. Now, one of the reasons why I love the song is because I think this band does a great job of covers. This is a cover of an old song. So this song is notorious for several reasons. Number one, the title, the content is controversial for sure. But there's an urban legend that a woman was stabbed and killed during the playing of this song when it was being played by the original band.
Okay.
All right. Turns out that's not true. It was a different song, but they had just played that song.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
That concert was the Almont Free concert, which we've talked about before.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Before you guess.
Oh, yeah, I won't guess yet. Keep going.
This song was written by the original lead singer,
mm-hmm.
one of the most well-known men in all of rock and roll.
Yes.
When he brought it to the guitar player is like, this is great. I love it, but let's turn it into a samba.
Okay.
And so he added percussion, a little bit of tambourine,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of the ow,
uh-huh.
a lot of that stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Now then. Back to the cover band, the band who covered this song.
Yeah.
This was the final single from this band until 2021.
I'm pretty confident I know what it is. I didn't even honestly remember that it came out in 94, but
the song came out and played at the very end of the movie, An Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, I know what it is, for sure.
What you got?
So this song was originally by the Rolling Stones.
That's correct.
And this song was then covered in, apparently, 1994 by the band Guns N' Roses. And the name of this song is Sympathy for the Devil. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year, storing many men's soul and faith. I was around.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name, D.
This is one of my favorite songs of all time. Now, I really like the Rolling Stones version better, but sure. I do like the Guns N' Roses version. I thought it was great use at the end of Interview with a Vampire. But, man, I'm shook. I did not know that this came out in 94. It's great.
Okay.
You surprised me.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh, yeah. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game.
Very good, very good. So here's the rest of the story on this one.
Yeah.
Right? Guns N' Roses has been a train wreck from their inception, right?
Right.
Okay? But this is what caused Slash and Duff to be like, we're out. We're done with this crap. And they eventually form a band with a lead singer from a song that we're going to talk about here in a second. But Slash took this song as the ultimate slap in the face because he laid down a guitar solo. And Axl brought in another guitar player, a friend of his.
Wow.
Who played Slash's exact solo. So basically he copied him, but replaced him on this track.
What the heck?
How do you replace a guy like Slash?
You're Axl Rose.
Exactly. Slash says when he listens to the song, he says it's the sound of a band breaking up. But I love it. To your number four.
All right. Number four.
Four.
It is a cover song. You talked about this. There may be songs that you're like, you may have given me the name of the song and I still don't know what it
is. Smile and nod, right?
Right. Okay. So the original artist, we have talked about at least once, if not two or three times.
Okay.
The artist, the original artist, would record a new album in 1994 called Outside. And he would sing this cover song that had come out, in 94 while he was touring that album. Okay.
Okay.
The guitarist passed away in April of 1993. The cover was recorded 6 months later. The title comes from a couple of different sources. One is a novella by Robert Heinlein, and one is a 1954 DC comic book.
Okay. Okay. All right.
It was covered in 1974 by a woman named Lulu. The Lulu recording was produced by the original artist, and it went to number 3 on the UK singles chart.
Okay. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
I have been studying up on my James Bond theme songs.
And yes.
Lulu
yep.
sings the theme song to The Man with the Golden Gun.
Guys, this is what we would say is foreshadowing for an upcoming episode on the Shirley You Can't Be Serious podcast.
That's right.
Because Jason is putting the 007 band of brothers back together again, who was it last year or year before we covered Best of the Bond Girls?
That's right.
And
Bond Girl Draft.
The Bond Girl Draft. And then this year, maybe next episode.
Week.
Yeah, next episode, he's going to be covering with those guys James Bond songs. Love it. Okay.
Lulu.
Lulu's version went to number 3 on the UK singles chart.
Okay.
It got covered again in 1982 by Midjourney, and it was covered by this band, like I said, November of 1990. It was originally the B-side to Space Oddity. As far as the song goes, the original song, the guy who covered it and his band, the guy who sang it, he had personal journal. And he put it as number 45 in his top 50 favorite albums of all time. This guy was introduced to this album by then drummer Chad Channing. Does that name ring a bell for you? Mm-mm. Okay. The band that covered it, we've covered before, but they had a different drummer when we covered their album. When they covered it, it was for an MTV Unplugged episode, but the singer actually had his guitar plugged into a fuzz box. This cover version was number 3 on MTV's most played videos on February 18th, 1995.
Wow. Okay. So it's clearly a song that I've heard.
6 months after they recorded this song on this Unplugged MTV, the lead singer committed suicide.
Okay. So clearly it's Nirvana.
Yes. The Robert Heinlein book was called The Man Who Sold the Moon, and the 1954 DC comic was called The Man Who Sold the Earth.
Okay, D, this is The Man Who Sold the World.
So not everybody even knows what the name of that song is.
Right.
Right. But after Kurt Cobain's death, this song kind of became his ghost song. This is the quote from Rolling Stone. This was a man with the world at his fingertips, and he gave it all up.
Interesting.
And Rolling Stone ranked this as the number one in the reader's poll of the greatest live cover songs. Not me.
Love it. I love it. Okay, well, moving on to more tragedy. Let's go back to your number five song.
Yeah, and your number...
And my number four
song. Four song. Yep. Okay. As a refresher, we have... Written by the bass player, bossa nova song. I'm going to tell you, it was composed in the front seat of a Winnebago on a $25 nylon string guitar. And I have to wonder if the Winnebago had some scientifically treated petroleum under the hood. I'm pretty sure they didn't have Shirley Temple's under the hood.
Right.
So you obviously know what this is.
Yes. This is Interstate Love Song by Stone Temple Pilots. They talked about how when they would travel, mm-hmm. you'd have the van, and like attached to the van, it was like a its own thing, like a trailer where a guy could go back and be by himself and hang out or think or get high, write songs, you know?
Right, right.
So the title comes from the idea that Scott was in Atlanta while his fiance was in California, and that they would write these songs while they were on the interstate.
Right. I actually, on the way over here today, listened to our episode from exactly 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Where we covered Stone Temple Pilots' Core mm-hmm. with Brad Moore, who yep. just got finished covering live with us.
He did.
We seem to come around on the fall on these things all of the time. And on that episode, we had Brad Moore helping us. We had Kevin Davis as executive producer. And on that episode, we had Jeff Johnson come in and give us the Shirley showcase, and he gave us his opinion on those two albums that we were covering, Core and Dirt by Alice in Chains. But then when we started our 1994 albums, he suggested that we should put Purple on the list.
We should cover Purple at some point.
Dude, Purple and Super Unknown or Jar of Flies, those would be excellent matchups.
All three, very, very worthy.
Absolutely. So,
by the way,
yeah,
there is no truth to the fact that Jeff Johnson does look like the weird guy with a long nose in this video. Okay, just putting that out there.
Okay. Okay.
This was released as a single September 9th of 94, almost exactly 30 years ago today.
Yeah.
And became a number one hit on the Billboard album rock charts.
If you hadn't had this on your list, and I thought that you might, but if you hadn't had it on your list and you hadn't gotten it by the time I had gotten pretty far down in the clues, I was going to say the original name of this band was Mighty Joe Young. And I thought that probably would have gotten
it. That would probably have shaken the cobwebs loose.
There you go. So that brings us to my number three.
Your number three.
Okay.
Three.
We just talked about the Unplugged Nirvana album and MTV episode, right?
Right.
Okay, two guys from a different band came to play with Kurt Cobain and the rest of Nirvana for that Unplugged show.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
Okay. They're brothers. Names are Chris Kirkwood and Kurt Kirkwood.
Okay.
Haven't got it yet.
No.
I didn't think so. Okay. These guys started as an 80s punk band. And they were outsiders even for 80s punk bands.
Okay.
They were never really famous. They had a big underground following. Got formed in 79 and started off as hardcore punk, but then they did a very unique thing. They mixed country and punk and came up with their own sound, and they don't sound like anything else.
Country and punk. This is not going to be my genre, I have a feeling.
I have a feeling you're right, but I know that you're going to know this song that I'm talking about
okay.
that came out in 94.
All
right?
Okay, very good.
So these two brothers in this band playing with Kurt Cobain in 93, they cover one of this band's songs. Kurt Cobain sings this song. And just like Man Who Sold the World, this song becomes well known, despite the fact that it was not particularly well known back when they did it in the 80s. Okay.
Yep.
They opened for Nirvana in their In Utero tour.
Okay.
And that's how Kurt Cobain said, why don't you guys come and play with us on MTV Unplugged? I'm going to play you the version of their song that Nirvana played on Unplugged. You ready?
Sure.
Many a hammer scaled the grand old face of the plateau. Some belong to strangers and some to folks you know.
Don't recognize that song.
Nothing is hitting me at this moment.
Okay, that's okay, because that's not the song that I'm talking about. These guys, as I said, nobody really, not many people paying attention to this band.
Okay.
But there they are with Nirvana at their absolute peak, playing a cover of one of their songs. And then in 94, they come out with another song. Now, before I play you that song, I want you to hear how bad the original version of that song that you just listened to is.
Many a hand has filled the grand old face of the plateau. Some belong to strangers and some folks you.
You're making my ears bleed, D. That's horrible, D.
It's really pretty bad. It's really pretty bad. And these guys, I mean, the singer, so much is said, I was trying to offend people. I was trying to get people scared away.
Okay.
And still somehow people just kept coming to see our show. Okay. They came out with an album, new album, in 1994. And that's where this song that I'm talking about comes from. You're not even going to recognize this as the same band. Here it is. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
I'm playing you the song. This is the song. You ready?
Okay, D, I do recognize that song. That song is called Backwater by the Meat Puppets.
That's right. I mean, I can't imagine, like, I had to go, is this the same guys?
That does not sound like the same
band. It doesn't sound the same at all, right? I mean, they have
made singing clear. It's melodic.
Yes, it's good.
Yes.
It's really, really good. Like, I came across them because of Lake of Fire, and I'm looking at all these things from 94, and I'm like, oh, these guys had something in 94. I pull it, and I'm like, oh, I loved this song, and I had just kind of forgotten it. But then as I made a playlist of these songs and threw it into the mix, and I'm like, crap, this is really good.
That's
this
a good song. Really I like good. That. So this is way better than that other crap thing you played for me.
So here's the rest of the story.
Okay.
These guys who've been the underdogs their whole lives suddenly have this very successful song.
They may seem rearranged in the backwater slur, and there's something that'll never change.
They get lots of money, and Chris Kirkwood starts shooting up heroin as much as he can. Right?
Because why not?
They almost immediately start falling apart because of his heroin use. And his brother was, he described it as, he's like, it's like seeing someone on an iceberg floating away from you. Like, you just, you see it and you know it's happening, but there's nothing that you can do about it.
Wow.
And he was shooting up with his wife at the time. Then within just a few months, his mother dies of cancer, and then his wife dies of an infection that she gets from the shooting up heroin.
Right.
And so he absolutely loses it. He says, I took a nosedive into the abyss. He was done with life. He was ready to be finished. He goes into a post office and starts harassing the security guard. So eventually, the security guard forces him out the door, at which point he grabs the security guard's baton and starts to hit him with it. So the security guard shoots him.
Death by security guard?
He did not die, but he did go to prison. And he went, and he went to prison for a while. He had been in prison before, and so this was like strike two or three or four for him. So he went to prison for a while. And in an unusual turn of events, prison actually helped him. And he got out. He got clean. And the meat puppets got back together again, still together today.
Ah, that's an interesting story. You pulled that one out. That's a good one. Okay. I like it. I like it. Okay. My number three?
We're to your number three.
All right. Okay. The details of this song are going to make it hard for me to disguise it because I think it's a pretty well-known story.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So this band went from bouncing around in the Southeast to worldwide dominance in 94. Literally, they would sell demos out of the back of their car from like 89 to 94. And then the album that they released in 94 goes 22 times platinum.
Wow.
It's one of the biggest selling albums of the 90s.
Okay.
Now, get this. They were heard on the radio by David Letterman on a Tuesday. David Letterman's driving home. Whatever radio station in New York City plays, hey, here's a band out of the South. We think this song's pretty good. See what you think.
Okay.
Letterman is thunderstruck. He pulls over. He calls his people. And he says, I want this band to play on the Late Show. Get them in here.
Okay.
So that's a Tuesday. On Friday night, they play David Letterman and go on to become one of the biggest bands in the world in 94. David Crosby from Crosby's, Stills, and Nash sings backup on this song. And there is a special version made for Sesame Street teaching kids to hold hands with an adult while crossing the street.
So this is Hootie and the Blowfish, Hold My Hand.
With a little love and some tenderness, we'll walk upon the water, we'll rise above the mist, with a little peace.
And so yes. Okay, so this song to me is irresistible. I don't care who you are. If this song doesn't make you smile, a little bit happier, it makes you tap your feet. It's so great, and it's so sort of squeaky clean that it's for everybody. Like, my grandmother would love this song. Right?
Cracked Rear View, the album that this song comes from, was one of my staples in 1994 and 1995.
If we don't cover this, what are we doing?
We're not doing the right thing if we don't.
Right. We got to cover this. Dee, do you want to hear the top 10 from February 18th, 1995?
Normally, I say yes to this question, but knowing how bad the top 10 was on a routine basis in 1994 and 1995, I shudder to think what beat this song out.
Brace yourself.
Okay. I'm ready.
Number nine, Sukiyaki by 4 p.m.
What?
Do you remember that one?
No.
Better Than Hold My Hand by...
What?
What? Number eight, Always by Bon Jovi.
Okay.
It's kind of a big, sugary song from Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Number seven, Candy Rain by Soul for Rain. Ring a bell?
Not a bit.
Number six, You Gotta Be by Desiree.
Nope.
You would know that one.
Okay.
Number five, Baby by Brandy.
No.
Number four, Another Night by The Real McCoy.
Still no.
Number three, On Bended Knee by Boyz II Men.
That was everywhere, so I at least know that song.
Number two, Take a Bow by Madonna.
Not one of her best.
And number one, Creep by TLC.
The wrong version of Creep.
Right.
There were three Creeps in 95, and they picked the wrong one.
That's a whole ton of sugar right there, man. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I love Hold My Hand.
It's a fantastic one. Great choice.
All right, Dee. Let's move on to your number two.
Two. Okay. This one, I doubt, is one of your favorite songs.
Okay.
But it's monumental.
If it's monumental, then I'm ready for it. Let's do this.
All right. The singer, who is really the whole band on this one, is now a composer for many movies, including a Disney Pixar movie.
Okay. Is this Danny Elfman? We're not in Danny Elfman territory, are we?
It is not Danny Elfman.
Okay.
Okay. It is also not Alan Silvestri. Okay.
It's Hans Zimmer.
All right. So the band's first album came out in 1989. It was not, I don't think either one of us had it on our list in 89. Okay.
All right.
The group is currently, and I'm saying the group, his group, is currently creating a soundtrack to the next Tron movie.
Ooh.
So that's exciting. In 1997, this guy, lead singer for this band, was described by Spin magazine, I'm quoting here, as the most vital artist in music.
Wow, what a high compliment that
right.
is.
Right. So this album came out in 1994, and I'm going to spin out of control on this a little bit here, so forgive me. But okay. At the time that this album was recorded, the artist was living at 10050 Celio Drive, Benedict Canyon, L.A. Does that address mean anything to you?
No.
It was the site of the murder of Sharon Tate.
Whoa.
It was her old house, Roman Polanski's old house.
Wow. Okay.
It had been converted into a studio, and they were using it such to record this album.
I'm on the hook, man.
And he's living there in the house, recording in the house.
Helter Skelter was written on the walls of this place.
In blood.
Gosh. Okay, keep going.
Okay. This song is built around a heavily modified sample of the bass drum from Iggy Pop's Nightclubbing. Okay? I'll play that for you in a second. First, I'm going to tell you this. People think it's about lust, but it's really about self-hatred and obsession. Comes okay. from the same, this band comes from the same record label as Bush, Interscope, throwback to our Bush 16 Stone, and
Revenge of the Nerds.
Revenge of the Nerds, right. Ted Field's Interscope Records.
Okay.
This song reached number 41 on the Hot 100.
Okay.
The video was shot inside of an abandoned hospital and was made to look like a 19th century mad scientist lab. Okay.
Yep.
It was directed by Mark Romanek, who later directed a Johnny Cash video that covered a different song from this same album.
Okay.
I'm going to play you the bass drum from Iggy Pop's Nightclubbing. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Doesn't quite get you there. It was very modified.
Only time I remember us talking about a Johnny Cash cover is when we talked about Depeche Mode.
The Depeche Mode Personal Jesus was the B-side to that single that of the Johnny Cash cover of the song from this album that is not this song.
Okay. Wow. Monumental and vital artist. Keep going.
Okay. And I'm going to talk more here in just a minute about Johnny Cash because this is just too good not to talk about. But for now, let's stay focused on this particular song. Okay. All right?
Yep.
As I mentioned, people think it's about lust, but it's really about self-hatred. Okay? The composer and the singer and lead of this band,
okay.
I said he composed the music for a Pixar movie. That Pixar movie was called Soul.
Okay.
He's also composed the music for a whole lot of David Fincher movies.
Okay. So clearly, we're talking about Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails.
Yes.
This has to be the song that they play at the very beginning of the movie Seven, and that song is called Closer.
You let me violate you. You let me desecrate you. You let me penetrate you.
I mean, he changed the face of music with that song.
He did.
He brought industrial to the mainstream. I mean, obviously, standing on the shoulders of guys like Depeche Mode, obviously.
Sure, right? Sure.
Okay, but I had to say, I had to talk about this, all right? So Johnny Cash's album that came out that year, 1994, since we're talking about it, I just got to throw this out there. It was released 3 weeks after Kurt Cobain's death.
Okay.
The song that you probably remember from that album is Delia's Gone, which is a song about the murder of a 14-year-old girl back in like 1900 on Christmas Day by her boyfriend.
Okay.
But the quote, the line from the Johnny Cash song that totally caught me off guard in 1994 was, and it's from the perspective of her murderer, right?
Yeah.
Johnny is singing as her murderer. He said, talking about her evil, he says, "Kind of evil make me want to grab my submachine." Like, why is Johnny Cash singing these kind of gangster lyrics? Okay.
Right.
So I mentioned that Johnny Cash covered another song from this album. That one was on American 4, The Man Comes Around, which came out in 2001, last album to be released while he was still alive. The video, as I mentioned, was directed by Mark Romanek, who had directed Closer.
Okay.
That video was named Video of the Year by the Grammys and by the CMAs, and is named Best Video of All Time by NME. When the reps for Johnny Cash first came to Trent Reznor with this idea of him covering Hurt, name of the song.
Okay.
Trent Reznor said, "I was flattered, but I thought it was going to be gimmicky." Eventually they record it, they send it to him, and these are his words. He said, "When I heard it, I felt like I was watching my girlfriend fucking somebody else." Okay.
Yeah.
It was made him uncomfortable because he said this song Hurt came from a very deep and personal place for him. Right. And then 3 months later, he is recording with Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine. And he gets sent the DVD of the video. He puts the video on and these are his words. "Wow. Tears swelling, silence, goosebumps. Wow. I just lost my girlfriend because that song isn't mine anymore."
All right. Very good.
So here's Johnny Cash's version of Hurt.
"I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus."
Knowing that that's coming from a guy who knows the end is in sight and is doing everything he can to record everything he loves, I see why Trent Reznor felt the way that he did.
I love it. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Okay.
That was your number two?
That was my number two. We're on to your number two, sir.
Okay. My number two. The album was released March 8th of 1994. This album went on to become 6 times platinum. Here's how this song was written. The lead singer, who you know well, was driving home, and he had about a 15-minute drive from this main city to his home, and he was listening to the radio, and he heard a news anchor come on and was just kind of talking about the news of the day. And he said he was just kind of half listening, half looking around, and he said something that he said stuck with him. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's 3 words, and they don't really go together. When you look at it, you're like, they don't belong in the same sentence.
Okay.
And he said it's because he misheard it.
Okay.
He just heard a couple of random words and he thought, well, those 3 words together, they sound pretty good together.
Okay.
Okay. So when he wrote this song, he brought it to his band and it was one of those where it's a bit slower. It's not their usual style. So he played it for them. He didn't think they were going to like it. Well, they did like it and it became maybe the biggest song of the summer of 94. Okay, so I thought this band was kind of new to the scene. They had actually been around for 10 years already. There is an interesting story about the name of the album. The lead singer got this from a 70s TV show in Seattle. Ding, ding, ding.
Right.
Where it was a children's show where you had this clown named J.P. Patches on in the mornings.
Okay.
Okay. Apparently, it was on a magazine cover or it was on a VHS tape or something.
Okay.
For this 70s TV show. And he thought that it said Super Unknown, but what it really said was Super Clown with a K.
I knew when you said Seattle show that we were talking about the album Super Unknown. This is obviously Soundgarden. And I can tell you the 3 words that don't belong together.
What are the 3 words?
Black hole, sun.
In my. Indisposed, in disguises no one knows. Has the face, lies the snake. In the sun, in my disgrace. Boiling heat.
You got it. Okay, this song is so good. Ruled the summer of 94 and may have one of the weirdest videos of all time.
Yeah, the popping eyes and the weird, like, melting faces as people are looking what appeared to be like some sort of solar event destroying the world while they're all very happy and, like, it looks like a bad acid trip Sesame Street episode. Yes.
When you go back and watch this video, you can tell that they're like, okay, there's this really cool thing named computer graphics, and we're going to stretch their faces and make their eyes bug out. It's going to be really awesome.
I haven't seen it in a long time. At the time, I was impressed by it. I suppose probably looking back at it now, it looks probably dated. So I saw Michael Beanhorn talking about this song. Like, they're recording Super Unknown, and Michael Beanhorn is like, you know, we need something more, we need something bigger. And Chris is like, I don't know what to do. And he says, well, you know, do something for your fans. And he's like, but I don't know what that is. And he goes, well, what do you like? And he's like, I like Cream and I like the Beatles. And he says, well, then go home and write a song like Cream and Beatles.
Yeah.
So it comes back, gives him the recording of what he's done. And Michael Beanhorn says, my job isn't to pick out good songs. My job is to pick out what's not working in the song. He said from the first notes of the song, he was like, what the is this? And then as he kept listening, he kept waiting. He's just like, where is it going to go bad? This is incredible.
Right.
And he's like, okay, the verse is perfect. He's going to it up on the chorus. Chorus comes and it's even more beautiful than the verse. And so he immediately calls and he's like, what the Chris? And Chris is like, what? What's wrong? And he's like, you're a fucking genius. He goes, what are you talking about? He's like, Black Hole Sun.
Black Hole Sun, won't you come wash away the rain? Black Hole Sun, won't you come, won't you come, won't you come?
Wow, that is a great pull right there.
It's an amazing song.
It is an amazing song.
Yeah.
Okay, D, honorable mentions. You're up.
Okay, I'm going to cheat a little bit, and okay. I think you'll forgive me for cheating a little bit. All right. Sure. One of my honorable mentions is a song that I love dearly and probably deserves to be in the top five, but it's an emotional song for me because of someone else who's involved in the song at this moment. And so all I'm going to say is Nutshell, Alice in Chains, Jar of Flies. It deserves to be one of the top songs of 1994. All right.
That's fair.
All right. Now I'll go back to our happy episode and talk about other honorable mentions. See if I can lead you into it. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. First honorable mention, Seattle band. The singer in this band worked at a shoe store called John Fluvok with Chris Cornell's girlfriend, Susan Silver, who also managed bands out of a little place out of the back of it.
Okay, you're tickling my memory there.
Okay, the lead singer of the band met Chris Cornell, met Andrew Wood, met Layne Staley, met all of those guys working at the shoe store, but he was younger. He's about 5 years younger than they were.
Okay.
But he was definitely into music. He was playing drums. And so once he got a band together and they were playing in the same studio that we talked about when we covered Alice in Chains' Dirt, that they all got together and just hung out all day long. He would talk to Layne Staley all day long about different artists that they like and singing styles. He talked to Andrew Wood about different types of music because he was like, he was just this huge, like he looked like a rock star, even though they hadn't made it yet, right? This band, when they hit it, like it was kind of a weird thing because the grunge thing had kind of started to blossom and the band had only been together for about a year and a half. And there was this big like band showcase, basically, that record producers came to listen to new bands. EMI showed interest in this young band and said, why don't you guys come down to LA? They go down to LA to play a show and EMI doesn't even show up.
Ghost them,
right. But ironically, a turn of fate, Madonna's record label Maverick is there. They love them and they sign this band.
Gosh, you're talking all around some stuff I feel like we've covered before, but I don't remember exactly. Keep going.
So as I said, this was a Seattle band. Lead singer was from I think born in Illinois, raised in Texas, but like at 14, he was in Seattle with the rest of the guys. But this band got a lot of hate, not only because they were young, not only because they had a Seattle sound, but because people kept talking about them being from California, even though they were actually from Seattle, specifically Courtney Love. They had a big feud with her because she kept talking about, you know, they're just this California band. And then later, these guys would join up with some of the old members of Live, and they would form the Gracious Few.
We just talked about it. I just listened to this yesterday.
The big song
yeah.
that they had before this song was a song called Cover Me. And Seattle band, they're more rock and roll than grunge. They have their big break of luck when Alice in Chains is having lots of trouble because of Lane Staley's heroin use. And Lane basically, they break up and they're supposed to be opening for Metallica. Well, this band then comes in and becomes the opener for Metallica. And Wayne Coyne said, this band was not the nail in the coffin of grunge. This band was the coffin brought in to take grunge out. You know the band?
I know the band.
Okay.
This band is Candlebox.
Correct. I'll give you one more hint.
Okay. Yep.
The beginning line of this song was, Andy, I didn't mean to treat you bad. But at the last second, he changed it and said, now maybe I didn't mean to treat you bad.
This song is called Far Behind.
Now maybe I didn't mean to treat you bad, yeah, but I did anyway, and then maybe.
This is a brilliant song. I love this song.
I've heard, and I don't know if this is precise, but I can see it, that this song is a love song from heroin to Andy Wood. This idea of, I didn't mean to treat you bad, but I did it anyway. But it also is a mournful song for Kevin Martin having not tried to do more for Andy before his heroin overdose.
I love that idea that this is a love song from heroin to Andy.
Yeah. Okay, so there's one of my honorable all mentions. Right. You do your honorable mention. One of yours now.
Man, you have all these heavy songs. I've got like, you know, these goofy
Hold
songs.
Hold my hand.
Don't tell me you didn't love that song.
I did. I loved it.
Okay, so my first honorable mention was released in October of 93. It debuts on the charts in January of 94. It peaks at number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100, April of 94. Okay? And I have told you many times that this is the single greatest charades song of all time.
I do not remember having that conversation.
When you're playing charades and you put this in your arsenal, you've already got one in your pocket of you're winning, okay?
Okay.
Mark it down. Okay.
All right.
So, this song has been named on VH1's Awesomely Bad Songs,
okay,
which I don't agree with.
Obviously,
okay?
Yes.
The lead singer in this band
mm-hmm.
has a very distinct voice.
Okay.
In fact, it's been said of him, if a bullfrog could sing appealingly, it would sound like this guy.
Okay, so deep voice. Deep voice.
So, each of these three verses describe the isolation and suffering of a different child.
I've got it.
What's the name of this song, D?
This is Crash Test Dummies, and I think the name of the song is just...
You got it.
Once there was this kid who got into an accident and couldn't come to school, but we...
I'm pretty sure Descript is going to cut that out. Yes, it's MMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMM all over the air for about 5 minutes. It sure was.
It also makes an appearance at a very emotional moment in the movie Dumb and Dumber.
I remember that well. And his hair had turned from black into bright white.
Lloyd is screaming at Harry, "I'm sorry, Mr. Perfect!" Okay, your other honorable mention.
Next honorable mention, okay. I don't think that the song is going to be in your wheelhouse, but this is one of those albums from 94 that was a mainstay for me, okay?
Okay.
I'm so sure that this is not in your wheelhouse that I'm going to tell you the members of the band right off the bat.
Okay.
Okay, we've got Jeff Barrow and Beth Gibbons, okay? Nope, we're not ringing any bells.
Nothing
all right.
So far. Nope.
If people know the band, they'll know who that is already. All right. They met at an enterprise allowance course. Enterprise allowance was this thing that Margaret Thatcher put together for business entrepreneurs to teach them how to be entrepreneurs.
Are they English?
They are. They are British, yes.
They are British, okay.
They began, this is great, they began working on their first recordings in Nina Cherry's kitchen.
I forgot Nina Cherry's British as well.
She actually also had a minor hit in 1994 called 7 Seconds. Pick that one up. It wasn't quite Buffalo Dance, but, and Milli Vanilli wasn't even around to knock her out of the running, but... Okay, and so then this guy named Adrian Utley, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name.
All right.
He comes along, he meets them, and he starts introducing them to theremins, that thing. And then what's something that's called a cymbal, which I looked it up. It looks like a coffee table with strings and pedals. Oh, anyway, these guys, because of these new things that Adrian was bringing along, had a very unique sound. And basically are credited with bringing what was called the Bristol sound into the mainstream. And Bristol is the place in the UK that they're from, okay? They had kind of a hip-hop beat to their stuff, but their music was not remotely hip-hop. It sounded more like bluesy jazz. Like, it sounded like the James Bond theme music, genuinely.
Okay.
This song in particular sounds like it could be a James Bond theme, all
okay.
right?
Okay.
But they didn't record it digitally. They recorded it on vinyl. Then they would take the vinyl records and they would put them on the floor and they would walk on them and treat them like skateboards to get them all scratched up so that it has this old school scratchy record effect.
Crackly, yeah.
Yeah, so like I bought the CD and all of a sudden it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah. This song that is the last single that came off of this album. Album is called Dummy. Not ringing any bells yet, okay.
Nope.
Last song on the album, last single to be released. It sampled Isaac Hayes' song, Ike's Rap 2. It was released in August of 1994. It reached number 13 on the UK singles. They put this video on their YouTube channel in 2015, so 9 years ago. Since then, it's had 35 million views.
Okay. I would love to tell you what this is, but I don't even have it.
You don't
close.
Even have a close. No. Okay. So the name of this band, I know you know because I've said before, is Portishead.
Okay.
Which is a name of a town nearby, Portishead.
Okay.
And the name of the song is Glory Box.
I'm so tired of playing with this bow and arrow. Gonna give my heart away.
Okay, I don't recognize that song, but it definitely does have the sound of a James Bond theme.
Had the CD. I don't even remember how it came into my radar, but it was a big one in 94. Honorable mention. There you go.
Hey, I did like it. I thought that would be a complete new discovery for me. So,
yeah.
Okay. My last honorable mention.
Yep.
I'm excited to drop this trivia on you, okay?
Okay.
So this, as we said, is right before Napster. This is right before Spotify. This is right before streaming and internet even. The artist, the lead singer for this particular song, wrote an article, and the headline was, "My song got played on Pandora 1 million times, and all I got was $16.89, less than what I make from a single t-shirt sale." And that article went viral.
Okay.
And continues to be a reference point for money and streaming and like
how bad it is for the artist.
This song was played over a million times on Pandora and he got $16.
It's terrible.
By the way, that article came out in 2013.
Yeah.
More interesting stuff on this song. The band's label made the singer write a letter to radio stations denying that the song was about drugs when clearly it was. Here's another clue for you. In the video, this shows the lead singer. The lead singer's name was David Lowery, losing a boxing match with Sandra Bernhardt.
Oh, gosh. I kind of remember that.
Does that ring a bell with you?
I kind of do remember that. Okay, keep going.
Okay. This song reached number 64 on the Hot 100 in May of 94, reached number 3 on the modern rock charts. The album that it comes off of is a 93 album called Kerosene Hat. When you talk about using drugs, one might say that you are getting
high.
And so this song would be the opposite of that, and it's called
Low.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Now that I hear it, yes, I know that song, yes.
Super catchy chorus.
Uh-huh.
All about, hey, 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 it's like being stoned.
Yeah, not about drugs.
So they made him change the lyrics, hey, 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 like being stone. What are we, is this 1984? And
Stone Gossard? I don't
Right.
Hey, what, who?
They what? Made him change the lyrics because they didn't want it perceived that this song is about drug use.
I'll be with you, girl, like being low. Hey, 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 like being stoned.
We've got all of these guys writing all of these songs about drugs, and they're getting caught up in this?
Hey, Tipper Gore was in the studio, apparently, or something, because
okay.
That seems pretty harmless.
That's
relatively harmless compared to a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
That was my honorable mention.
So I had a couple new discoveries that I just want to turn you on, turn other people on to, okay?
Yep.
One of them is a Megadeth song. I'm not a Megadeth guy, but okay. Megadeth had a release in 1994 called A Tout Le Monde.
Okay.
I get Melissa Mingle in here to help me pronounce that, I guess.
Right.
But it's really pretty good. We'll listen to it here.
Don't remember where I was. I realized life was a game.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a throwback to the old 80s stuff.
It sounds
yeah.
like 80s rock. That's right.
Yeah. And so another one that came up that I remember listening to because I had the soundtrack when I was a kid that I had just kind of forgotten about is a band called Machines of Loving Grace, and it's called Golgotha Tenement Blues, but it's off the Crow soundtrack, and it's awesome. Scott Benzel is now a member of the faculty at the California Institute for the Arts. So nice, you know, sideways career move for him.
Wow.
But anyway, there you go. I think maybe the very first song on the Crow soundtrack. I loved it. So did you have any songs that were new to you?
Well, so here's what I'm going to tell you. Yeah. I went to a concert in 1994 in Texas Stadium. I saw the Eagles. It was the hottest ticket around. Eagles had gotten back together for the Hell Freezes Over tour, and they had a woman who opened for them that I had never heard of. And when she played, she blew my socks off.
Okay.
And the one particular song that she played that night that I just fell instantly in love with is a song called Come to My Window.
Melissa Etheridge.
It was Melissa Etheridge. And when I saw her that night, and then she plays this beautiful song, I'm like, that song's a hit.
Yeah.
Sure enough.
You're right.
I was right. By the way, I've not stopped sweating from that concert in July.
In Texas Stadium.
In Texas Stadium with the roof open. Okay, we're up to our number ones.
Oh, my goodness.
Who's going first?
One.
We might have the same number one song.
If we Baker Street this again, I'm gonna go nuts. Okay?
I'll
start.
Okay.
I'll start.
You start. Right.
My song is a cover song.
Okay.
The guy who wrote it in 84 was having lunch with Bob Dylan later on, and he said, hey, you know, I really like this song of yours, Bob. How long did it take you to write? And Bob Dylan's like, 15 minutes. And Bob Dylan's like, I really like this song that you've got, the song that I'm talking about now. How long did it take you to write? And this guy says 2 years. That was a lie. It took him 5 years.
Okay. Wow.
This song was his tormentor and his muse.
Uh-huh.
He wrote, well, nobody really knows how many verses he wrote. It's just crazy long. And he would throw things away and pick things and mix it up. And eventually he got it to where he thought it was in its best shape. He takes it to the president of CBS Records, who he signed with at the time. The song is something like 8 or 9 minutes long, and the president of CBS Records says, I can't produce this crap.
Right.
What are you talking about? This is ridiculous. And this song, it's my number one song of 94. It's one of the most well-known songs worldwide. Okay?
Yes.
And it's rejected by the president of CBS Records. And so he goes to an independent label who produces this song. And I got to tell you, the 1984 version by the original artist is almost unlistenable to me, knowing what the song sounds like today.
Okay. All right.
This is 94.
Okay.
So then round about late 80s, early 90s, this group of folks gets together, these artists get together, and they decide to make a tribute album to this artist who wrote this song. Okay. And John Cale, who is, I believe he was with the Velvet Underground, if okay. I'm remembering right.
Okay.
He tells this, the guy who wrote this song, he's like, I really like that song. Can you fax me over the pages? And I would like to cover that song on this tribute album that we're doing for you. And so the writer sends him something like 15 pages worth of lyrics. And he's like, oh my gosh. And so he says, I pick out the ones that have more religious undertones to them and are kind of cheeky. And so they make this tribute album to this guy. And because it's a tribute album to an artist that is not super popular in the first place, about 5 CDs get sold. Okay.
Sure.
One of those CDs goes to a lady in New York City who has a kid, I mean, teenager, who is house sitting for her. And he happens to come across this CD with this cover of this song in it. And he's like, I really like this. And he's a musician himself. And so in 1990, when he records this song, he records his cover of the John Cale cover of the original song from 1984. So it's 10 years later, right?
Sure.
And so
it's a cover of a cover.
It's a cover of a cover. And this guy's voice is beautiful. And it's just him and his electric guitar. And the guitar sounds like this ethereal beam of light from heaven. And his voice is like the angel that comes along with it. Okay. It comes out in 94, which is why it's on my list. It actually doesn't do exceptionally well. It gets some notice, but it doesn't do exceptionally well. It's only 3 years later when the singer suddenly dies under very tragic circumstances that his catalog and this album come to light. Singer was swimming in the Tennessee River, singing Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin as he was floating along, had his boots on, suddenly disappeared, and nobody ever saw him again. The name of the album that came out in 94 that started getting notoriety in 1997 at his death is called Grace. The name of the song is also religious and has probably been covered by more people than any other song in the world.
So this song is Hallelujah, and the singer is Jeff Buckley.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Killing me, man. You're killing me.
It's so beautiful. I couldn't not pick it as my number one song. And so you're right, cover of a cover. And so because that's the one that everybody came to know, every cover that you've heard somebody else
that's
do
right.
is a cover of a cover of a cover. So here's Leonard Cohen's original version of this song.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you?
That sounds like Jimmy in accounting at karaoke night.
I always like to bring this song up as a song that took a decade to fully ripen and input from various artists, but man, when it came ripe, it was perfect.
Okay, so we've talked about my number one song at length before.
Okay.
It wasn't a track by track, but it was a song that we discussed pretty thoroughly.
Okay.
About 2 years ago. Okay?
Okay.
This song came off of an EP that was released in January of 94. Yeah. It's the first EP to reach number one on the album charts.
You know, I actually had to look up the difference between EP and LP.
Uh-huh.
Because, and I don't know if it's this one or not, but an EP from 1994 is 30 minutes long. And I had it, and I listened to it nonstop, and I would have never said this is different than any other album. I mean, it's longer than some of the original Beatles albums. So.
Right.
So anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. An EP, yes.
An EP. And I'm confident that this is the same album we're talking about here.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Different song, same album.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Yep.
So after this band's 1993 tour, they went to the studio for a few days. They grabbed their acoustic guitars just to see what would happen. There's a lot of parallels between Guns N' Roses' Lies album and this album, which rhymes with lies. But let's go to the studio with our acoustic guitar. Let's see what happens. And they pump out this song, among others that are just amazing songs. I feel like we need to cover this at some point.
Yeah, like I said, this one versus Purple sometime in our future would be great.
So we talked about this, I think, when we were doing kind of the separate history of before we did the track by track.
Okay.
And this particular singer, this is Lane Staley of Alice in Chains.
Yep.
Struggling mightily with heroin at this time. Mm-hmm. They didn't even know if he would be able to perform, let alone show up.
When they did the unplugged.
Yeah. Right. And I think we even talked about how he went back home to kind of get away, to try to get a hold of his life. And he pulled into like a grocery store. And there were some kids that had parked their cars kind of in the back of the parking lot and were just kind of having a little impromptu party in the back of the parking lot. And they had this song cranked up. And when he pulled up next to him, he rolled down their window and started singing the song with them. They were like, oh my gosh.
Right. This one is No Excuses.
Time in 1994, I was not particularly an Alice in Chains fan, but this song is irresistible. It is amazing.
This is one of those albums, and I'm calling it an album, even though, I mean, it's 30 minutes long.
It's an album.
It's an album, and it is good from beginning to end, and I wore it out back in the day. The original version of these songs that we've discussed are fantastic, and the unplugged version, I mean, it brought it up a notch too, so.
Very good. Very good. All right, so that brings us to the end of our best songs of 94.
Guys, tell us what you think. What did we miss? My goodness, what an incredible year. Maybe the last incredible year for music. But so glad we got to go rewind ourselves to 1994.
I had fun with this, D. Thank you so much for doing this. This is kind of the capper of our five albums of 94 or five. Next week, we are doing our James Bond theme song draft. We've got five podcasts participating. It's going to be a lot of fun. You definitely want to come back as we draft our favorite James Bond theme songs.
Be sure and tune in for that, guys. We will see you next week.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.